You knew it would get there sooner or later, that this whole mess would be Bill Clinton's fault. The cleanest does it again. Well, thanks so much for being with us here on the Guy James Show today. We sincerely appreciate having each and every one of you with us here on the program on the Head On Radio Network. Look forward to having you with us again tomorrow here on the Guy James Show. And never.
The Quality News Network. Congressional Democrats have sent President Bush the Iraq War funding bill, which contains a timetable for a U.S. troop withdrawal. On the four-year anniversary of President Bush's mission accomplished statement aboard an aircraft carrier, he visited MacDill Air Force Base in Florida today to meet with U.S. Central Command. Later today, he plans to make a statement about his expected veto of the Iraq War funding bill because he says it would cause chaos. There are conflicting reports about whether the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq has been killed. Some say he was killed by Sunni tribesmen. However, an al-Qaeda umbrella group stated on its website that he is still alive. The State Department list of countries that are sponsors of terror has Iran as the leader. There was a 25% increase in terrorist attacks last year. Much of that activity occurred in Iraq. The Iraqi government said today more than 1,500 civilians were killed throughout the country in April. That's nearly a 20% drop from March. April was one of the deadliest months so far this year for U.S. forces, though. At least 104 American troops were killed during the month, making it the sixth deadliest month since the war began 4 years ago. Venezuela's President Hugo Chavez has taken over the last of the privately run oil fields in his country. He is also nationalizing the country's electricity and telecommunications companies. Yesterday, Chavez symbolically announced that he is pulling Venezuela out of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. In Havana, thousands of workers celebrated May Day as they marched through Cuba's Revolution Plaza. However, ailing leader Fidel Castro was not seen in public. In cities across the U.S. today, immigrants are holding rallies to demand a path to citizenship for the estimated 12 million illegal immigrants currently in America. Phoenix, Detroit, and Miami were among the cities where marches were held. Turkey's constitutional court has blocked an Islamic candidate from running for president of the country. The court upheld the appeal by the main secular political party. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert is resisting the increased calls for his resignation a day after the release of a report which was highly critical of the way he handled the war against Hezbollah last summer. According to instant polls, a large majority of Israelis favor his immediate resignation, as well as that of the country's defense minister. And in Nigeria's southern oil-producing region today, gunmen seized an American oil worker and five other foreigners.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The American Lung Association's list of the most polluted cities in the U.S. finds Los Angeles as the leader. Pittsburgh was the second most polluted city, followed by Bakersfield, California. The Interior Department has released a five-year plan to open oil drilling off the Virginia coast and expand drilling in Alaska and the Gulf of Mexico. The proposal now awaits congressional and presidential approval. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke warned against economic isolationism. He said it would be a serious mistake that could jeopardize the benefits of free trade. Rupert Murdoch's News Corp has made a $5 billion offer to buy Dow Jones & Company, which owns the Wall Street Journal. The unsolicited bid would either be in cash or a cash and News Corp stock combination. Ford reports its auto sales in April fell nearly 13% compared to a year ago. Toyota says its April sales were down more than 4% in the U.S., while Daimler Chrysler had a little over a 1% increase in car sales for the month. The average price nationwide for a gallon of unleaded gasoline is $2.97. It went up 10 cents last week, according to the Energy Department. Light sweet crude is trading at $64.40 a barrel. And near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones in record territory, up 72 points. The NASDAQ up 6, the S&P 500 up 4. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It's the Week in Review. All topics are valid, and there's a lot to talk about. One of the main things that has shown up in the news is that the student loan business turns out to be a scam. That won't surprise many of you who are valiantly trying to pay off your student loans, that there are kickbacks between the industry and universities. The Bush administration has known about it for several years, but as usual, does nothing about it. Meanwhile, in Iraq, we have the highest toll ever for a month. Here it is, 4 years after mission accomplished. And, well, the mission is so not accomplished that apparently more are dying now than in the wartime. Well, what Bush called the wartime before he declared mission accomplished. Meanwhile, people in the Attorney General's office continue to point fingers at each other as they admit that they didn't decide who would be fired, leaving only one group left who hasn't admitted anything. That, of course, is the White House. And finally, here in Washington, the D.C. madam is up for trial. She is a very successful entrepreneur of an escort business who has released 46 pounds of paper with the clients of herself and her agency, all kinds of important people in Washington, including, of course, Randall Tobias, who was most well-known prior to the Madam case for trying to promote abstinence in foreign countries. The hypocrisy is real and all over the place. If you want to call in and talk about any of these stories or one of your own, it's easy to do. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON or 888-488-MARK. Either one works. Just call in and let me know what you're thinking about. I want to start with this student loan scandal. It's really just coming into the news. We don't know all the details yet. But it appears that for years, colleges and lenders have been working together. Basically, the way the student loan program works is that the government guarantees student loans at a lower rate than students can get ordinarily. And that makes sense because, after all, we want people to go to college, and the student loan program is a great way to allow people to go to college who can't afford to pay the very high costs of colleges these days. Well, the problem is, of course, is that we're helping the lenders more than we're helping out the students. And this is a program that is very well protected in the law. In fact, in bankruptcy law, you can get out of just about anything in bankruptcy except your student loan program. That is around your neck for life. You've always got to pay the money back to the person who gave you the loans. So it's a very, very good deal for lenders. It's also a good deal for schools who raise the price of education higher and higher. Used to be a time, actually, when my father went to college, when he could work at a construction job. He earned $500 in a summer, and that was enough to pay for a semester at college at the University of Michigan back in the 1960s. That's not true anymore. It's very hard to get into college, and one of the only ways people can go is through the student loan programs. So the colleges do well. The lenders do well. The students, well, they've got to pay, like I said, at these rates pretty much all their lives. They can't avoid in bankruptcy. And Congress spends a lot of money doing it. So because the lenders do well and the colleges do well, they're working together now. Kickback schemes, in effect, where the lender will give gifts to the colleges if the college steers students in that lender's direction. Pretty disgusting stuff when you think about it, because if there's any money to be made here, significant money to be made, it should be refunded either to the student or to Congress that provides the money for the education. So when Bill Clinton discovered this was happening, his education department put out a program to stop this scheme. And George Bush stopped the plan to stop the scheme. I guess that really shouldn't surprise anyone here. After all, big banks are certainly one of the Republican coalition. Any very rich organization is part of that coalition. So the Education Department 2001 proposal was shelved, and everyone just went quietly by their way until, of course, thank God there are some people in the media that discovered it. If you want to call in and talk about that program, I want to hear from you. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK. There are other things in the news, of course. It gets tiring talking about Iraq because, well, there's just no hope there. I mean, we lost the war. It's over. But it's not over for the 1% of Americans that are still fighting it. More than 100 troops died in April, the month just closed, higher than in any month at any time in this war, a war that is the third longest U.S. war, already gone on longer than the World War II, longer than even the Civil War, I think. Civil War would be about 4 years. This thing doesn't seem to have an ending. And, of course, more Iraqis die, even more, whereas 100 Americans died this month, 100 civilians died today and yesterday and the day before and the day before that. Some 3,000 a month, some 37,000 a year, hundreds of thousands over the years. What are we trying to accomplish? So the Democrats have a bill. It has passed Congress. It's passed the Senate and the House. Congress has passed a bill. You don't have to call it the Democrats anymore, although it was not a very bipartisan bill. Every Democrat except Joe Lieberman voted for it. Every Republican except for Gordon Smith of Oregon and Chuck Hagel of Nebraska voted against it. But the bill would bring the troops home. It would bring them home in July with a extension by the president. He can get till October, but that's it. Our men and women come home. We've lost the war. There's no use throwing more good money after bad, more good lives on after bad. And yet, George Bush says he's going to veto it, says that he is going to insist that the war in Iraq go on without end. And there's talk in Washington about compromise, not from the president, of course, but talk about perhaps maybe the Democrats and the Republicans should establish benchmarks, if not a date to take the troops home, at least a benchmark, and if the Iraqi government doesn't achieve that benchmark, then bring the troops home. Of course, the dirty little inside scoop about all of this is that the Democrats have the advantage here. Constitutionally, friends, we have the advantage because the president needs money to continue his war, and he's not going to get it without some help from the Democrats in Congress. Toll-free, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll take your calls right after the break. On this or any topic you want to talk about, it's the Week in Review. We'll be right back after this.
This is The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
It must have been prayer meeting with Reverend Brother Bob.
See, hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
You absolutely know that you cannot mention Robert Sunday without conjuring me. This is a known fact.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Well, sometimes I do it on purpose.
You know, the thing that kills me, you know, God just continues to punk Robertson. after time, and it goes back for years. You know, let's talk a minute about his business venture. From 91 to 94, he was involved in something called Calo Vita, and it was a multi-level marketing company that breeds that pyramid scheme.
Yeah, like Amway.
Sold beauty products and healthcare products. Oh, they had a product called Sea of Galilee Mud Mask.
No, they did not.
Oh, yes, thank you.
You no.
Bob, as a heart attack, I'm serious.
Sea of Galilee Mud Mask?
Oh, yeah, it was part of the product line.
Prayer meeting edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid, Wednesday nights, 6 to 9 p.m. here on the Head On Radio Network.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's the Week in Review. There's a student loan scandal, which I really hope gets a lot more publicity. You know, it's one of those things that you kind of have to know the devil's in the details. But the heart of it is, in general, you have the fox watching the hen house, right? You have a Bush administration official who had $100,000 of stock in a student loan company while overseeing the industry. Oh, well, that's good. That way, when he makes sure that there can be kickbacks between the lenders and the universities, he gets a chunk of the change. Pretty cool. I mean, the heart of the matter is, if there's money to be made here, and all this is legal, folks, the scary thing is not that laws are broken. I mean, there may be some federal anti-inducement statutes, but the heart of this scandal is that it's legal. It's legal to do this. It cheats the taxpayers. It cheats students. And what we know is that the Bush administration has shelved proposals to stop it. Toll free, 888-488-MARK. Let's go to Dave in California. Dave, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, Mark. I don't know if it's pure coincidence, but I tried to let you be aware that I, too, may have just been caught up in the middle of one of these student loan scandals. Essentially, my story, you may already be a bit aware of it if you've received it, that I did an adult grad school program 22 years ago or so, and I was living very modestly, struggling, and going into the student loans pretty heavily. But as soon as I graduated, I was offered a really good position, a mental health professional overseeing several residential care programs. So I continued to live at a very low overhead and set out to pay off the student loans as fast as I can, and I did just that. In less than 3 years, I'd paid off several student loans. But one bank in particular didn't like what I had done. Apparently that cost them money. They didn't make enough. So they rewrote the loan, apparently, and submitted it to the feds to have them pay it also. So I don't know if I'm...
So they actually got doubly paid then from you and from the federal government.
And they sat on this now for 20-some years, and just in the last month or so, I'm being dinged several times a week by a collection agency for the student loan. So,
and the problem, of course, is that no one's watching this. I mean, you expect the government, which is, after all, in a public-private partnership, to be carefully watching the people who it does business with. And as we've learned, they're simply not doing that. Hopefully, with this kind of stuff in the news, Dave, you can get some justice. go in and remind people that, you know, I don't know the specifics of your situation, what's going on, but clearly there's a problem with this whole program and with the people watching it.
I'm hoping you can explain better what you've heard of it. Where is this published, and what have you learned on it?
Oh, well, it's in the Washington Post front page today. Basically, what's going on is there's a whole series of kickbacks. And when I say kickback, it's legal. I mean, payments between universities and loan companies in order to get the universities to give them the students. So, you know, First Bank of America, I don't know that it's Bank of America, I was just picking a random name, but First Bank goes to doesn't matter. I'm University of Nebraska. I'm picking stuff out of thin air, but and it says University of Nebraska, if you will steer your students our way, we'll give a nice wing to your university. We'll give you lots of books. We'll give donations and things like that. And what it shows really is that this stuff is making a tremendous profit. I mean, the whole purpose of the student loan program was that presumably lenders would have difficulty giving loans to students. So I don't really know why. Frankly, I think if someone's going to university, there's a very good chance they're going to pay back that loan. It's good or as better a chance as, you know, Americans that haven't gone to university. I don't see why it's such a great risk. But they argued it was such a great risk that we need all this money and subsidies from the federal government. And we also need protections such as that you can't declare bankruptcy and get rid of your student loans. They are around your neck forever. And all those protections apparently do so well that the lenders make so much money that they got enough money back to give kickbacks to universities. So apparently the inspector general said that they need to stop this. It was proposed under the Clinton administration, and the Bush administration shelved it, just completely said, forget it. We don't want to hurt our allies in the industry. And so any reform of this has failed. But check it out. It's on the front page of the Washington Post. It tells you about the story, and maybe you can use that story to get yourself some relief, Dave. I hope you do. Good luck to you.
I'm going to try. You know, I always thought the student loans were kind of a low-interest, low-profit thing. The banks.
That's what they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
That's how they're designed to be. That's when they first started. That's what they were. That's their goal, but I guess it's really not going anywhere. Wait. Hey, thanks for your call, Dave. I appreciate it. Other news going on this week, of course, is there's still some fallout from Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez and his firing of the U.S. prosecutors. Now we have another person going on record. In addition to Alberto Gonzalez, we have the Deputy Attorney General, number two at Justice, Paul McNulty, the same guy who told the public that these prosecutors were being fired for performance reasons, admitted that he had no idea why they were being fired, and assured the investigators in Congress that he played no role in putting any names on the list. So Attorney General Gonzalez did decide who's prosecuted, but he fully supports and thinks it was a good idea, didn't decide who was fired. Deputy Attorney General McNulty didn't decide who was fired, but assures us it was for performance reasons. The person they delegated it to, Kyle Sampson, he has no idea how the names got on the list. He didn't do it himself. William Mischella. I know Will Mischella. I worked with him on the House Judiciary Committee. He's a Republican. And he says that he didn't put the names on the list either. He did, however, come up with the bright idea to go around the Senate confirmation to make sure that the president could appoint U.S. prosecutors without any interference by that pesky other congressional body. Checks and balances out the window. Thank you, Will Mischella, for that. So he didn't involve. Well, as Chuck Schumer pointed it out, if the Attorney General didn't do it, and the Deputy Attorney General didn't do it, and the person they hired didn't do it, and Will Mischella, the guy who stuck that Patriot Act stuff in, didn't do it, then who did? As Schumer says, it makes it more likely that we know who did it. It was folks in the White House. People like Karl Rove were deciding for political reasons. Even though Gonzalez testified under oath he would never, ever, ever fire a U.S. prosecutor for political reasons. He would never fire anyone just because people like Carol Lamb were prosecuting Duke Cunningham for taking bribes. So who did? Who stole the cookie from the cookie jar? Well, let's see. It wasn't Gonzalez. It wasn't McNulty. It wasn't Kyle Sampson. Kyle Sampson's deputy, of course, is Monica Goodling. Monica Goodling, a proud graduate of Pat Robertson's fourth-tier university, right, in Alexandria, Virginia. By the way, Monica Goodling, we don't know whether she did or she didn't because, well, she's pled the fifth. She's told us that if she tells us the truth, she's going to be charged under criminal statutes. That's interesting. What truth could she possibly say and be charged under criminal statutes? Could it be that other officials have been lying under oath? And let's talk a little bit about Monica Goodling, because I think she shows just is who is in our government. Let's talk about her university, Regent University, a university that, according to the U.S. News and World Report ranking of law schools, is in the fourth tier of American law schools. And how many tiers are in the U.S. News and World Report ranking? Four. It's the lowest tier. And yet, go to its website. It says it is America's preeminent Christian university. You'd be amazed at all the people at Regent University that are in our government right now. And what's interesting is that they have this goal. Now, remember who's running this. It's Chancellor Pat Robertson, the same Pat Robertson who wants to abolish separation of church and state. The same Pat Robertson, by the way, who has invested hundreds of millions of dollars in diamond mines in Africa run by dictators like Charles Taylor, who regularly murder men and women and then force the children into his armies. So I guess there's no real moral problem here. But Pat Robertson says that the goal of this university, Regent University, is Christian leadership to change the world, is its motto. And they want to basically put people like moles in various places in government. And there's 150 graduates, according to the Regent's webpage, have served in the Bush administration. 150 graduates in this fourth-tier law school. Now, I you know, I'm not just pulling rank. I mean, okay, I did go to Yale, but that's not what I'm trying to say here. There are plenty of good universities across the nation. Why is it that the people that are in our government, are from the lowest-ranking university? Could it be that it is their mission to take our government apart from the inside out? In any case, Monica Goodling is the only one left who could have put the names on the list, and she has declared the fifth. Thankfully, the United States Congress has said, all right, if you're going to declare the fifth, we'll make you talk anyway. We'll give you immunity. We won't put Monica Goodling in jail, but you'd better tell us the truth. So we'll see what happens when Monica Goodling testifies. We'll see who put those names on the list. But I think the answer is obvious. It's the person who does just about everything in the Bush administration that's evil or wrong. Actually, there's only two people, really, that are in control. I say them all the time. One of them is Dick Cheney. I don't think he was involved in this one. The other was Karl Rove. And I do think he was involved. And you can already hear the White House change its tune. In fact, a White House spokesman just said today, quote, "The notion that the White House shouldn't be involved in presidential appointments is bizarre," unquote. Listen to how they change the spin. Listen to how they change the story. Now, the White House could have said from the beginning, yes, we fired these people. We fired them because they weren't loyal Bushies, as Kyle Sampson put it. We fired them because they were prosecuting Republicans, and we want them to prosecute more Democrats. We're firing them because Karl Rove said their heads must roll. Right? They didn't say that. No, instead, Alberto Gonzalez said, I would never, ever be involved in a political firing. Now their lies are coming home to roost. And now they're having to change their story. No real surprise there. Toll free, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-MARK, or 877-4-HEAD-ON. Give a call. It's the Week in Review, the one time a week where you can raise any topic you want. Let me hear from you on this or any other story. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. This week, the president of Colombia, Alvaro Uribe, is coming to Washington to meet with Bush in Congress. He doesn't deserve to be welcomed there. The right-wing Colombian has intimate ties with the paramilitaries who killed thousands of trade unionists, human rights activists, scholars, and leftists over the last couple of decades. Dozens of labor leaders were murdered last year alone. Several aides close to Uribe have been linked to the paramilitaries. His former domestic intelligence chief is accused of supplying the militias with details on academics and union officials chosen for assassination. And one leftist Colombian senator says that paramilitaries held meetings on ranches owned by Mr. Uribe and his brother back in the 1980s. This according to the New York Times. This is the kind of leader who should be shunned by Washington if our government honored human rights. But since Uribe fights leftist rebels and since he opens Colombia up to free trade, Bush loves him. And Colombia continues to receive the most aid of any country outside the Middle East and Afghanistan. Uribe will be easy to recognize in Washington. He's the visiting dignitary with blood dripping from his fingers. It'll mix perfectly with Bush's. I'm Matt Rothschild. And that's how I see it.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop and the Week in Review. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON. If you haven't called into the show before, we especially encourage you to call in. It's a great day to do so. Any topic you want to raise is valid, not just the ones I'm talking about. That's not always true, folks, so understand this is a rare, wonderful possibility. I want to back off. Well, not really back off. I don't really back off, but at least clarify something that I said before the break. I don't want anyone to think that I'm arguing that Christians, or specifically fundamentalist Christians, shouldn't be in our government. Of course they should. People of every walk of life should be in our government. My problem is with these Regent University grads. If you're a fundamentalist Christian, look, Antonin Scalia, all right? I don't like Antonin Scalia. I don't agree with him most of the time. I think he's actually very harmful to our government. But he's not a stupid guy. I would never accuse Scalia of being stupid. He's not. He's very smart. He's very evil. He's very dangerous. Regent University grads are stupid. Let's just face it. They are there solely in order to recreate our government in the image of the Taliban. And the reason they're there, let's face it, it's because of Kay Cole James. You know who she is? She was director for the Office of Personnel Management. And she, prior to that appointment, she was a dean at Regent University's government school. Now, for one thing, I don't trust any school founded by Pat Robertson, because Pat Robertson is not only severely morally compromised, but he also is out there not to make government good, but to make government more religious. So now we have 150 or so of these Regent University graduates. Now, again, understanding it's not just Tier 4 in the U.S. News and World Report. It is the lowest possible score, okay? Out of 136-plus law schools, it is tied for 136th place with all the other ones at the bottom. It is not... I mean, I don't know what you do when you go there. Maybe you have to sign your name and pledge hail to Jesus Christ and you get your degree. I don't know how dumb you have to be, but I assure you, Knight Law Schools are more highly rated than Regent University. And so what does it mean? It means that you have lawyers that are not just more conservative, but they really aren't very smart. And so what they're doing is they're doing whatever Pat Robertson tells them to do. They certainly don't care about things like civil rights, things like the First Amendment. They are there to politicize the department. So I just want to be clear, this isn't about Christians. It's about a certain kind of fundamentalist Christian, namely those that does what Pat Robertson says, just follows orders, and isn't there to serve their country. By the way, K. Cole James, you may remember her, after she resigned her Office of Personnel Management position, she went to work for Mitchell Wade. Remember Mitchell Wade? He's the same guy who bribed Duke Cunningham. So she got hundreds of thousands of dollars from him. I think about $500,000, quit after 2 months when he got in trouble. So this kind of thing, it just kind of goes around in Washington. I mean, I don't mean just to pick on Christians. Heck, I'll pick on a prominent Jewish person who I think it's about time that he leave his office. I'm talking, of course, of Paul Wolfowitz, the man who paid his girlfriend a couple $100,000 to get her a job. Now, it's knocking Wolfowitz out of his World Bank position because of corruption and nepotism does seem a little strange. As it's kind of, but you know, we got Al Capone for tax evasion. Sometimes you just take what you can get. I'd much rather get Wolfowitz on his extremely optimistic war claims. Remember, he was the guy who said it wouldn't cost us a thing. All the oil in Iraq would pay for itself. To me, that's criminal and enough to get him fired rather than this petty corruption scandal. But it's enough for me. This is a man who needs to go. He typifies America's bad face in the world, a face of a country that's not willing to work with other nations, but is insisting that we get our way all the time. And, of course, Iraq is not very pleasant right now, in addition to being the highest fatality ever. And so Congress is in a very interesting situation, and I was explaining this before the break. See, normally the president basically moves ahead, and the Democrats, if they try to do something, it'll be vetoed, and that's what's going to happen here. Expect a veto from George Bush on the bill to bring our troops home. But what's very interesting is that in this constitutional way, the Democrats have all the power. Because the way our funding in our government works is he has to get a bill from Congress. You can't fund anything in our government without a bill from Congress. Oh, sure, presidents try. We remember Ronald Reagan during the Arms for Hostages scandal. He used the money from selling arms to Iran to finance what he wanted to do in Central America. Why? Because he couldn't get the funding from Congress. Congress had cut off the funds. So President Reagan was forced to violate the law, violate the Constitution, and he and Ollie North and Poindexter went around it and, you know, funded it himself. Well, the same problem happens here. Bush can veto every bill the Democrats pass his way, but if he keeps vetoing, eventually the funding is going to end. He's only got a few more months in the pipeline, and without funding, he's got to bring the troops home. No matter how many arms this president sells to Iran, it's not enough to fund our war in Iraq. So the recriminations are beginning. The Republicans are saying the Democrats cutting off funding that would leave our troops stranded in Iraq. Well, no. Our troops would only be stranded in Iraq if the president left them stranded in Iraq. Let me give you an example. I mean, if someone gives you a car with a certain amount of gasoline in it, okay, they may not offer to pay for more gasoline, and maybe you have no money on you. But you know when you're in a car and you only got so much gasoline left, how much it takes to come home. And if you don't buy gas and you have no way to buy gas and you're left stranded somewhere, you know what? It's your own fault because you knew how much gas was in the tank. Bush knows exactly how many billions of dollars are in the tank to bring our troops home. The Democrats have even offered him more money if he'll use it to withdraw the troops in a smart way. And there's all kinds of possible compromises that are going on. One that I've supported is to actually leave troops in the Kurdish areas, where I think we would get a lot of support. The Kurds are pro-American. They're not shooting at Americans. Frankly, I'd like to leave a haven in Iraq for those that helped the United States of America. That's my particular plan. There are other plans around to bring the troops to the borders. The Democrats are willing to compromise. In fact, one bill that they're discussing now is a very interesting one, and I'd be curious to see if Bush vetoes it. They're starting to coalesce around a very small bill, small in Washington sense. It's about $19 billion, which is only a small amount of money in Washington. But what the bill would do would fund the war a little bit more, so I don't know if the left will support it, but for only about 60 days, 60 more days, and without the withdrawal dates that Bush has said he'll veto. Now, this sounds like a loser for the Democrats, but listen to what the bill does. It provides funds for military health care, new standards for resting, training, and equipping troops so that our troops can come home and rest more, and prohibitions on both torture and permanent bases in Iraq. And there would also be benchmarks. Actually, this bill might just be the right way to go because it only gives 60 days. It's a very, very short extension. It's 2 months more funding. And at the same time, we ban torture, finally, get it in the code so that when the president tortures someone or orders them to be tortured, he himself is breaking the law very clearly and can be impeached, and also bans permanent bases in Iraq. So the Democrats are trying to compromise. But at the end of the day, they hold the cards, and they have to stand firm. And there's a game of chicken going on here, basically, with the Democrats and with Bush. And the game of chicken is Bush going to take the limited amount of gas in the car and leave the car stranded? Is he going to take the limited amount of money for the troops and leave them in Iraq? The Democrats can pass a bill that says, here's money to bring them home, but what if he keeps vetoing it? If so, then the lives of servicemen and women are put in the middle of this game of chicken. And they have no one but their commander-in-chief to blame if they get stuck there. So it's a fascinating thing going on. It's really amazing to watch this administration, which hasn't gotten any checks and balances ever in its tenure, have to deal with Congress, have to deal with the role that the legislative body, Article 1 in our Constitution, the primary organ of government, according to the founders, Congress, asserting itself. And the Bush administration doesn't know what to do. When congressional committees send a subpoena to Condoleezza Rice and insist that she tell America how it is that even though George Tenet removed the language twice, we still had the language about Niger in the State of the Union speech, still had the president and the vice president try to trick the American people to fear a nuclear-armed Iraq. How did it get back in? I mean, I think we already know. I think it was Stephen Hadley, probably, or one of those other minions that we keep seeing getting promoted in the government because they show loyalty to the president and disloyalty to their country. But she's going to have to talk. Or she's going to be held in contempt of Congress. And Congress has a sergeant at arms at the ready. And if they had to, they literally could take her in. Wouldn't that be a fascinating constitutional crisis? What would she do? Hide in her house? Use the White House guard to protect her? Would we literally have White House police versus congressional police? This is a president who's never understood that Congress has a legitimate role in running the government. Well, he's learning now, folks. And I just hope the Democrats stand firm and hope that you help them stand firm with your letters and with your phone calls. Toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275 or 877-4-HEAD-ON. Call in, talk about anything you want. One thing I do want to touch when we come back from break is George Tenet. It's a little too little and a little too late, but it's all very interesting. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. If we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, you've reached the Johnsons. We're not available to take your call. If you're calling about the apartment for rent, please leave your name and number after the beep, and someone will get back to you.
Hi, my name is Sanjay Rana. I would like to make an appointment to see the apartment.
Oh, hi, this is Robin DiPaola, and I'm calling about the apartment. Please give me a call back at 2.
Hi, hello. This is Rafael Paredes. Please call me back at 718.
This is Jeannie Chu. I'd like to talk to you about the apartment. If you can please call me back.
Hello, my name's Clayton Anderson. I'm calling about the ad in the Sunday paper.
Oh, hello. This is Mrs. Johnson. You must be calling about the apartment.
I am. Is it still available?
Well, you're the first person to call about it. Are you available?
Housing discrimination of all kinds is illegal in the U.S. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Here's your last chance to call in if you want to. 888-488-MARK or 877-4-HEAD-ON. Both toll-free numbers will get you to me. It's the week in review. Talked about a lot of different things. I do want to talk about George Tenet because I had real mixed feelings watching that interview on 60 Minutes. It was like, you know, he was angry and he was hung out to dry, and yet the stuff that he says, stuff like the administration was manipulating intelligence and lying to the American people about Iraq having nukes or deciding to go to war in Iraq long before even the war in Afghanistan, these are things that I have reported on the Inside Scoop since June 2003. For almost 4 years, I've been saying what George Tenet is saying. I've been saying it when he was in power. But when he was in power, he didn't say a word. He was hung out to dry years ago, but he didn't say a word. Yeah, now I know he's got his book and he's got his $4 million advance. And, hey, you know, better late than never, right? I guess. I mean, at least Tenet has a conscience to some extent, even if you have to pay him $4 million for it. At least he's willing to come clean before Bush is out of office. But this information that, yes, there's no connection between Al-Qaeda and Iraq, and it was a silly, stupid thing, and yet the administration was looking for that connection. I mean, Richard Clark said it 2 years ago. Remember, before the Iran-Contra, not the Iran-Contra, the 9/11 Commission, he came up and he said that after the 9/11 attacks, a couple days after Dick Cheney, in fact, put Richard Clark in charge at the White House, because he thought a plane was coming in to destroy the White House, Cheney runs to the bunker, puts Richard Clark in charge. A couple days after, the president says, Richard Clark, tell me about the connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. And Richard Clark said, Mr. President, there is no connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. The president said, yeah, go find me one. Mr. President, there's just no connection. They don't like each other. They hate each other. They fight each other. President, I told you to find a connection. You go back and you give me a written report. He goes back. He gives a written report showing there's absolutely no connection. The president orders him to redo the report and do it again. He does it again. And again, Richard Clark, being an honest man, says there's no connection. I don't see George Tenet in the same light I see Richard Clark. Richard Clark, I think, had an obligation to truth and to defend his country. And for all the self-righteous anger of George Tenet about how he lies awake at night fearing Al-Qaeda getting a nuclear weapon, and heck, I fear it too. I fear it too. And I also fear that our war in Iraq has taken the attention off of some very dangerous people in Al-Qaeda. The whole thing seems a little self-serving when he waits years to tell the truth. George Tenet strikes me as an almost yes man. He's not a complete yes man. He's not, you know, a Condoleezza Rice or a Stephen Hadley or, you know, who'll just do whatever anyone says years later, defend the president to the grave. But he's pretty much of a yes man. I mean, this is a guy who told Clinton whatever Clinton wanted to hear and told Bush whatever Bush wanted to hear, right? I mean, here he hears Richard Perle, literally on September 12th, say, ooh, Iraq is going to pay. Iraq is going to pay for 9/11. Knowing that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. And he tells us about it 4 years later. Here, he apparently, according to George Tenet, said that he never said it was a slam dunk that there were WMDs in Iraq. He said it was a slam dunk that we could sell the public on this war. But he never explained how he used the word slam dunk till years later. George Tenet, if you were a true American patriot, you would have said these things back when I was saying these things. We both knew they were true in June 03, but they would have heard your voice a lot louder than they heard mine. They would have heard your voice prior to this president running for re-election or reselection, whatever he ran for. You could have changed the course of history. But instead, you wanted your Medal of Freedom, and in getting that medal, the president bought your silence. And even though you insist the medal had nothing to do with your science, I say, George Tenet, return the medal. You don't deserve it, and you know you don't deserve it. I'm glad, yes, that you're finally coming clean. I'm glad, yes, that you're finally telling America there's no connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, that Bush was warned not again and again about 9/11 and did nothing to try to stop it, that, yes, he was determined to go into Iraq long before 9/11, that yes, they had no plan for the war, that yes, they made up information about nuclear weapons, that yes, when twice in the speech the lines about Niger were removed, somebody snuck it back in. I'm glad you told us all this, but it's a little late, George Tenet, because now most of America already knows this stuff. It's not just all the Democrats, all the independents, and frankly, more and more Republicans are becoming independents. Heck, even Republicans, some of them, know this now. There's no one left for you to convince. The only people who still believe in this administration believe in it for wholly ideological reasons that have nothing to do. They know the administration's lying, or they lie to themselves. They lie to themselves to try to persuade themselves the administration isn't lying. There was no one left to convince, George Tenet. A little bit late. So I guess for the record, for history, I'm glad that Tenet's told the truth, but I won't be buying his book. No, I won't be buying his book. I'll buy Richard Clark's book. I'll buy Paul O'Neill's book. You're just a little bit too late. Still, for anyone who would believe that the administration wasn't lying, for anyone who believes that they just made a mistake, for anyone who still believes that oops, we went into Iraq, for anyone who believes that the war in Iraq was about democracy or anything other than oil, it is good to have George Tenet on the record. We have 150,000 troops in Iraq, another 100,000 contractors. It's barely talked about. We actually have an army of 250,000 there, and the contractors are being paid far more than our people in the military. So we have these mercenaries on the ground. We have our army there, and all we're doing is watching the country descend into anarchy. Just the other day, the Shiite Prime Minister Maliki fired Iraqis who were going after Shiite militia because, you see, he wants to create a Shiite state in Iraq. Forget the Sunnis. The Sunnis themselves, they don't want the Shiites in power. I don't truck with either of them. The only people in Iraq that have my sympathy are the Kurds and those Iraqis that put their neck out to help America. I care about them. The Shiites and the Sunnis are just going to wait. Maybe if we're there, they won't kill each other until we're gone. But the second we're gone, they're going to kill each other. I mean, the Republicans are right about this, that the moment we leave, the civil war will ramp it up, the violence will increase. I think that's true. I think that's true whenever we leave, whether it's in 2007, 2008, or 2028. So it's going to happen no matter what, folks. But while we delay, meanwhile, hundreds of Americans are dying each month. Hundreds of Iraqis are dying each day. And at the end of the day, what are we going to have? We're going to have the same civil war, the same nasty violence that, after all, led Iran and Iraq to murder a million people in the 1980s. It's going to happen no matter what, folks. No matter what. And when it does, you can bet the Republicans are going to say, "See, we told you, Democrats. We told you there'd be chaos in Iraq if we left." Well, I admit it. There will be chaos in Iraq if we leave. There's chaos in Iraq now. There's been chaos ever since we deposed Saddam Hussein. In fact, the last stable period of Iraq was when Saddam Hussein was in power, duly constrained by our no-fly zones and our United Nations weapons inspectors. Those were the good days, weren't they? 3,000 plus American servicemen were alive and well. Tens of thousands were not wounded, were not missing arms, legs, limbs. Hundreds of thousands of Iraqis were still alive and well. Hundreds more thousands, more millions more, were living in their country and not forced to exile. Way back then, Al-Qaeda didn't have any foothold in Iraq. And we could focus entirely on what Al-Qaeda was doing, trying to kill Americans. Wow, sounds like an idyllic time, doesn't it? Sounds like an idyllic time back when Saddam Hussein was in Iraq. There were problems. We had them pretty much contained. It's amazing how much damage this war has done and will do to America, not just this year, but 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now. Not just in lost money, lost treasure, lost lives, but in lost respect around the world. There was a time in the 1980s when the Chinese students at Tiananmen Square would raise the Statue of Liberty and remember America as a model for democracy in the world. No more. At least no more while this guy is still in office. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in tomorrow. We're going to talk about the radio. Not just Don Imus, but Rush Limbaugh and hate speech and, heck, all those people on mainstream talk radio who are filled with such hate and racism, it makes you wonder what made them be there in the first place. Don't miss tomorrow's very special show. This is Mark Levine signing off.
The Quality News Network. Congressional Democrats have sent President Bush the Iraq War funding bill, which contains a timetable for a U.S. troop withdrawal. On the four-year anniversary of President Bush's mission accomplished statement aboard an aircraft carrier, the president visited MacDill Air Force Base in Florida today to meet with U.S. Central Command. Later today, he plans to make a statement about his expected veto of the Iraq War funding bill. There are conflicting reports about whether the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq has been killed. Some say he was killed by Sunni tribesmen. However, an al-Qaeda umbrella group states on its website that he is still alive. The Iraqi government said today more than 1,500 civilians were killed throughout the country in April. That's a nearly 20% drop from March. April was one of the deadliest months so far this year for U.S. forces, though. At least 104 American troops were killed during the month, making it the sixth deadliest month since the war began 4 years ago. In cities across the U.S. today, immigrants are holding rallies to demand a path to citizenship for the estimated 12 million illegal immigrants currently in America. Venezuela's President Hugo Chavez has taken over the last of the privately run oil fields in his country. The companies forced to give up control include BP, ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, and Chevron. Chavez is also nationalizing Venezuela's electricity and telecommunications companies. Yesterday, he symbolically announced that he is pulling Venezuela out of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. In Havana, thousands of workers celebrated May Day as they marched through Cuba's Revolution Plaza. However, ailing leader Fidel Castro was not seen in public. The 80-year-old underwent intestinal surgery and stepped down from power temporarily 9 months ago. The State Department list of countries that are sponsors of terror has Iran as the leader. There was a 25% increase in terrorist attacks last year. Much of that activity occurred in Iraq.